Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time. And welcome to the newest In the Know podcast. Today we are going to be talking, in case you haven't heard it before, injuries. We're going to be talking about injuries. And just because we had so many injuries and so much fun talking about them all season long, I figured we needed more and more people to talk about injuries. So, hey, I brought on Graham McQueen again to talk about more injuries, and I decided to add Jason Colmes to the mix so he can also be angry about injuries. So I hope everybody's ready for a nice injury podcast. So Graham, was that too bitter of an intro?
No, not at all. I think it was an appropriate level of bitterness.
Yeah, I actually got some stuff on Twitter about how this is going to be a wrath cast, and I guess that opened bitterly, and I sound a little angry, but I want your honest take. Jason, when you heard the news that Anthony Davis was going to be shut down for the rest of the season, were you actually angry in any way? Like, what was your just, like, gut reaction?
I mean, my initial reaction was, you know, what did it? Because I didn't hear, you know, all the details at first, right? Because we sort of knew he was battling a couple things, and then this knee thing happened. So if it was – I was glad really to find out that it was really just the straw that broke the camel's back more than something catastrophic. So overall, it didn't really bother me. It was just more like a coup de grace.
So you didn't head home and grab your season tickets and take them to the bathroom and use them?
I was on my way home when I heard it, so that was partway true. But it was season tickets intact, right? I mean, I'm a holiday guy, so I'm good.
Oh, okay.
Cloud nine. Yeah.
So that's actually pretty funny that you're a holiday guy, considering. So is it this season that turned you into a holiday guy, or did you watch those half seasons of Holiday before and were like, that's my boy for half the season?
No. This is how I knew I was a holiday guy. I was trying to figure out like who I would kind of want on the team, and I was looking at point guards. And you could go find this email. Like I sent an email going like, oh, you know, I think I'd really like Jrue Holiday. You know, I kind of like him, and you know, and he'll be a restricted free agent, and you know, Dell is messing around with restricted free agents or whatever. And like I think McNamara said, like he just signed an extension, and I was like, the guy I wanted just snatched away from him. And so we traded for him. I was actually pretty happy, but I just like him. He's a all around good player. I like David West, right? He's got some of those same sort of qualities to him.
Yeah.
So I've liked him the whole time, and I've been consistently on the actual wagon, not the bandwagon that follows. I'm on the actual Drew wagon.
Right. So, serious question for you, Graham. Anthony Davis, the issue with his knee is tendinosis. He's been struggling with it for a little bit of time. We don't really know, like, how bad it's been. Is it just a flare-up? Like, apparently he sat out the second half of that game, and it wasn't really necessarily because he banged it. It was just because it was bothering him a little bit. But just your gut reaction, if this team was, I don't know, say we'll just flip their record at 44-26, is there any chance Anthony Davis is going to get surgery right now? Any chance?
I don't think so. I watched the interview. I don't remember if he said it, but he just kept saying he wanted to play, and it just, like, he kept, like, reiterating the point that it made sense, you know, and that's why they're even doing the shoulder thing, is just because it lines up with the knee thing. You might as well get it done. It just had the whole thing had a feel of, well, yeah, let's just go ahead and pull the plug and get him healthy and collect some, you know, ping pong balls. Like, that was the whole feel of the entire thing. You know, he even, you know, they sat him up there, Davis, at this, you know, this press conference, and he didn't even really know what was wrong with his knee. He's like, yeah, we're, you know, it's the knee thing's the primary issue. And then somebody, you know, after asking him about the shoulder, because that was the focus for some reason, but was like, oh, and what is it? You know, what is the problem with your knee, by the way? He couldn't even answer it. Like, he didn't know. He's like, that's why I don't. You know, and he had to stumble. It's like, oh, I'll figure that out when I go see the doctor. You know, it just felt like they were pulling the plug, which is what people have wanted for a while now. So, I don't know. I think that was a good decision.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, what are they playing? Like, and especially because when you look at the timeline that we're talking about, it's, I believe, 5-6 months of recovery. We don't know necessarily what's wrong with his knee, but the labrum repair that they're talking about, he's got a partial tear to his labrum.
Right.
And there's all kinds of a bazillion different ways you could do something to your labrum.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who are mad that he didn't get the surgery before last year, Eric Gordon, he tore his labrum and he didn't get surgery and he came back and he was fine. Like, there's a lot of ways to rehab your shoulder so that it's not messed up, always have to have surgery.
He's been playing the last 3 years. He's been pretty good. You know, clearly not an issue for him beyond the little, you know, ups and downs, I guess. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So he's going to get that surgery. That's like 5 to 6 months, which basically, if you look at a timeline, you know, that means he is – at the long end, coming back at the beginning of September, which is right, you know, you want to have a month of hard training before training camp starts to get back into shape. That's actually ideal because you don't want him to be, you know, if we wait until April and the end of the season, if you wait another month, that means that he will be coming back right at the beginning of training camp is right when he's going to start being cleared for things, which means he's not going to be able to participate in half the stuff they're doing for the first couple weeks. It's going to set us behind again. So it's just as far as the timeline goes, if you're going to be looking to next year, this is when it has to happen. So he is out for the rest of the season. But in the exact, like, it was completely overshadowed. Ryan Anderson was held out of that game right after they announced Anthony Davis's injuries with a groin injury, a phantom groin injury. I shouldn't say phantom. With a groin injury. I've heard it's his left groin, his right groin. Apparently just something happened to his groin. So, Jason, when you heard that Ryan Anderson wasn't going to be playing, did you go home and find your season tickets and try to use them in the bathroom.
No. No.
Because you still got your holiday.
Still got your holiday.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, is Ryan Anderson being out? And do you think, so first off, do you think this is a real injury? Do you think that this is, he's actually injured in a way that's going to keep him out? Or are they just using this as another way to try to get ping pong balls? I mean, where would you rank the likelihood that this is a serious injury that Ryan is dealing with?
I have no reason to doubt it. And beyond that, it just has the feel of something that's true. I mean, number one, for this to be a real fib, right, then Anderson has to be the one fibbing because he's actually saying it, right? This isn't just some release and then he's being, you know, cordoned off from the media. You know, he's talking to people about it and they, you know, he says like, I feel it over here and sometimes I feel it over there. And I agree. It seems to be a wandering groin, but, you know, what?
It's a great term.
Great term. Yeah. Right.
I'm just trying to be accurate. Nothing more. So, you know, so I agree that, you know, if you hone in on that, you can say, something's fishy, right? Like, just like a kid playing hooky, right? And he's going to pop up at the end of April and be like, hey, got you guys, right? But that just doesn't seem like him. Not that I really know him, right? But that just doesn't seem to fit. And then he actually has something to play for, right?
True, yeah.
You know, I mean, he's going to get X amount of dollars just based on his performance, right? But given the number of people out there and given the amount of money, you know, and then there's a certain amount of if you make a max deal versus a dollar less, that ain't a max deal unless you're LeBron, right? Because somehow he didn't have a max deal for several years and people forgot about this, but he at least turned down max deals. But, you know, that contract is the most money he'll ever make in his life. Is he really going to play games?
Right.
You know, there's no incentive for him to be complicit. You know, if this was a press release and then Anderson, you know, was just frozen in a cube somewhere, then okay, you know, my cynicism will take over. My cynicism, and it runneth deep. It is not telling me anything about that here, and nothing else that the team is doing is. Telling me that they're trying to get ping pong balls. I mean, what you just said was that the timing seems to be set up to optimize next season.
Yeah.
Not really the number of combinations from the fixed number of ping pong balls, by the way, assigned to the team. So that is a little benefit, but that seems more of like I got an extra nugget. Right? It doesn't really seem like the reason they're doing it. It's just the 11th nugget that we all dream of more than anything else.
Right.
I don't know. Does that hold any water for you?
So, you know, my cynicism runs pretty deep at this point, too. And whenever an injury like that just kind of appears out of nowhere, when the team, it feels like they're finally just shutting it down, it wouldn't shock me, but then why would, like, I don't know. Ryan Anderson, I don't feel like is going to be the difference between, you know, outplaying, I guess is not the right term, but underplaying the Sacramento Kings for the sixth spot in the bottom tier of teams. Like, Ryan Anderson is just not, I don't think he's that impactful of a guy because his offense is basically negated by his defense and he ends up being kind of a net neutral player. So I guess maybe net neutral is better than negative. So maybe we should be sitting him. But, you know, I just don't see that they're going to be sitting there thinking, hey, we need to sit Ryan Anderson down. Now, I wouldn't be shocked at all if, like, this is the second to last season game of the season or the last game of the season, and if we lose we're going to, you know, be the six from the bottom, and if we win, we'll be the seventh, that Ryan Anderson would suddenly come down with wandering groin again. But I don't think they would do it at this point. I just don't think it's going to matter that much in the greater scheme of things. So the next question I have, Graham, you get to answer the great mystery, which I think nobody actually wants to ask the question, because they don't want to remember that he's on this team.
Ah.
What happened to Norris Cole?
Who cares?
But, I mean, seriously, like, that guy has also got all kinds. So, like, he doesn't have a contract after the season. He should be playing for a contract right now. And he's just been, and every game he's listed as questionable, and then he doesn't play. So
it's still the lower back with him, right? Is that what they said?
Lower back is what we've heard over and over again. So I know those back spasms can be pretty awful.
Yeah.
But are you a little surprised he hasn't pushed through? Like, this is an opportunity for him in a lot of respects, right?
Yeah, I guess. Or is it? You know, I guess he would want to be on the court as much as he could. Especially if you're playing poorly in extended minutes, you're not making yourself look good, but then coming out completely with injury doesn't really help that in any way. So,
yeah, but
he could get.
I will say this about Cole, though. When he went down, he had probably had, like, the best five-game stretch of his entire season.
Yeah, that's true.
So, and I did hear this one conspiracy. Someone sent it to me in a message, so I want to get your take on it. I don't think the timing actually matches, but so Norris Cole, he's playing all these minutes. He's been playing a lot of minutes for the Pelicans for a couple months now. And they say, we're bringing in Tim Frazier and we're going to play him. Would Norris Cole look at that and say, if he's just trying to think of his next contract, wouldn't it be better for him to just say, look, I've got a lower back thing, I can't play, so he doesn't have, like, in recent, like, in the front of people's minds, the fact that he was just replaced in the lineup by a guy out of the D-League.
So it's like save face kind of deal.
Exactly. Like, the fact that, you know, we're going to play Tim Frazier to see what we got, and, you know, and then he just says, well, then, you know, put me on the injured list so I don't have to be coming off the bench behind a D-League guy. Any chance that could be real, or is that just, you know, overthinking it?
That's quite a stretch.
I mean, this is the team and staff where Gentry has taken Drew Holiday, who makes $11 million a year, right, and says, I'm going to put him on the bench for X reason, right? Like, so then how is anybody coming off the bench? Anderson's been off the bench. Tyreek's been off the bench. I don't understand how, quote, off the bench is a penalty on this team. Yeah. And the GMs look at context. Like, the GMs are not as dumb as people think they are, at least in the same ways, right?
Right.
They have very limited decisions, and therefore they look – or very options. And so they look dumb sometimes. But they actually spend a lot of time looking at basketball players. So that would be my take that about why that – that's what I would put up against that theory and say, I really don't get above the threshold with that conspiracy theory.
Right. Yeah, and my take on it is, like, if you are a GM of another team and you're looking for a backup point guard, are you going to look at this season, and are you actually watching the Pelicans at this point? Are you watching the last 16 games of the Pelicans and saying, wait a second, he's coming off the bench? Or what's really going to happen, are you going to have your really, really low-paid intern pull all the video of Norris Cole doing the things that you need a backup point guard to do from when he played, and put it together for you to view to supplement your knowledge when you're making a decision. There's a myth out there that these GMs watch all the basketball. They don't do that, but like that's kind of, like he's going to have an impression of Norris Cole already, and then he's just going to say, "All right, I need a point guard who can, you know, run a high pick and roll and distribute the ball to the wing shooters. Can Norris Cole do that?" And when they find that there's no video of him doing that, then they're going to make a decision, right?
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, to back up your point, there's an old podcast before the ascension of Amin El-Hassan, where he describes his job with the Suns back when he was happy with them.
Right.
So you know it was a long time ago. And he just said he would sit down and watch all this film and like type it all into an Excel file. And people were like, "Whoa, you can type it into an Excel file." Right? And they would just pore over stuff like that. That those were the types of inputs that would go into the data, as opposed to just sitting around staring at real time.
Right. Yep. Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, it's a fun theory. But I don't buy that on Norris Cole. I think Norris Cole just has, like, we have seen players in the past who have had back problems that just keep them out for like 5, 6, 7, 8 games, and he's being listed as questionable. So right now, what that really means is he's getting rehab, and if it feels tight, he's not playing. And we're hoping at some point it'll stop feeling tight, and then he'll play. Or maybe they're not hoping that. Maybe they don't care at this point. I don't think there's a ton of caring going on for some of the people at this point in the season. So now that we've talked about the immediate injuries, is there anybody I forgot? Is there anybody who is recently injured over like the last couple weeks? Am I forgetting somebody?
Ajinsa.
Oh yeah, Ajinsa.
That's right.
Yeah. So his sternum was busted.
It's heartbreaking.
So,
yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
And so but he's actually, were you a little surprised that he's actually could be coming back in the next few games? Cause, it looks like they're raising him to questionable in game after game now.
I don't know why.
If I were him, I wouldn't be playing. I mean, but I'm not an NBA player. That's probably why.
Right.
But you are not going to send me out there against a bunch of giants when the bone that covers all of my important organs, right, is basically broken. I'm sorry. I'm getting paid whether I do it anyway. I'm under contract. It all depends on the details of the injury, but yeah. It's a little surprising to me. I figured he was done. Done. Dunzo.
Yeah, I really didn't expect to see him again this season.
Yeah.
Okay, so now that we've talked about the recently injured dudes, I want to actually go back and just – I had a podcast with McNamara back in the – I guess it was the off season. It was when we heard the first news that Quincy Pondexter had surgery on his knee the first time. Or at least the first time as a Pelican, because he'd actually had knee surgery before when he was with the Grizzlies. So this is the first time as a Pelican. And the story came out then that, hey, yeah, he had hurt his knee actually before the playoffs, and he basically kept the trainers from giving him an MRI because he felt like he would probably be pulled out and he wouldn't get to play. And Mike and I went back and forth, and I said, look, you know, and Mike says, is it okay that he did that? And I was like, you know, he's just a bit role player. Like, you know, he wants to have played on the big stage and be able to talk about that. So good on you, Quincy, for fighting through and helping us do something and get to the playoffs and get, you know, do something in the playoffs a little bit at least. Now, of course, he has another surgery. He has not played a minute this year. The recovery times I'm still hearing are like almost near training camp again. So what is your take, Graham, on Quincy's decision to play on the injured knee? And also, if the Pelicans had any sort of situation, like, do you think that they've learned from any of this crap? Like, if Quincy went and hurt his knee, or, like, somebody was limping around a little bit, do you think that they ever even asked, do you want an MRI? Or do you think they just, like, immediately put a hood over his head, bundle him up, stuff him in an MRI machine and see what happens?
Just stow him away somewhere.
Yeah.
No, I can't fault him for wanting to play, you know. You don't really see a lot of athletes opting to, all right, I'm just going to call it a season here and, you know, get surgery unless it's absolutely necessary. And I guess he wasn't convinced it was absolutely necessary. But it's like his situation's a little scary because the same thing happened in Memphis, right? He had the knee surgery, came back to a completely new coach, didn't play as well as he had played the year before, ended up falling out of the rotation, and hence we got him on a buy low type of deal. But it's like the same scenario that he went through in Memphis, and, you know, he did have like a career half year with us when he played last year. You know, it's going to be hard to come back and live back up to that. I don't know. I'm worried about, you know, Quincy. I'm worried about that situation, you know, and people said it a lot like this year, you know, or at least for the first part, you know, oh, if we had Quincy, he was one of those guys where it's like, oh, if we had him, oh, if we had him, oh, if we had him. Well, you know, I don't know where he sits next year in the plans, you know. We got him under contract, but you miss a whole year and an entire offseason, come back to a brand new system and new team, you know. Maybe he should have gotten that surgery back or, you know, should have, you know, sat out when he could have. So,
yeah. So let me ask you this, though. Which would surprise you more? That Quincy Pondexter comes back next year, plays, you know, the majority of the season without any sort of surgeries or anything more than maybe a scope at, you know, some point, maybe. But he's 90% or better of what we saw last season. Or Quincy struggles next year, too, with injuries, and the next year, and he's out of the league by the end of that's the end of his contract.
Oh man, that's, I don't even want to think about that, because I immediately started leaning more towards, you know, the injury side.
Right. Is that just a function of our team?
Yeah, I just feel depressed now. I'm not expect him to come back and play at 90% of what he did last year. What did he shoot? He was like the number two catch and shoot 3-point shooter or something behind like Eric. It was like, wasn't he up there with them? Like Eric Gordon was like number one with Korver, and then Pondexter was shooting like 43% or something from
Babbitt was up with Korver, and yeah. Gordon was pretty close. Yeah.
They were all up there. You know, it was. I wouldn't expect him to come back and play, you know, close to that.
I'll ask you the same question, Jason. Which would surprise you more? Which of those two scenarios is more surprising to you?
No, it would be more surprising to me if he continued down the sort of injury road to hell. So let me tell you why. So number one, in here is a tacit assumption that somehow either if he had not played in the playoffs or stopped earlier, that everything would be of the same severity and he would be done with all of these problems sooner, right? He could have come back sooner or whatnot, or he had somehow done more damage and now it's harder to recover. So he, in order for the second thing to be true, the surgery would have to, in some sense, be a different surgery. If it's a piece of loose cartilage, I'm not a medical doctor, but I don't understand how the situation is significantly worse after an invasive surgery, right? Like in general, invasion is part of what the problem is, and then waiting for stuff just to heal up. And generally, you know, unless you're dealing with bones and stuff like that, the surface area isn't that much of an issue. But like when you have open heart surgery, the invasion is the problem, not dorking around with the heart. Right. Same thing with brain surgery. You can could have brain surgery in somebody that's awake, but cutting their skull open is the problem. So the details, I don't know, but I'm not convinced that playing sort of made it worse, considering he could play in the playoffs, right?
Right.
I don't know what he's dealing with here, but he described some of that a little bit more in recent interviews, because for some reason they've suddenly become a lot more forthcoming. Still trying to figure that out.
Well, a lot more forthcoming about some medical question stuff, but yeah. I mean, don't you feel like that's just a fact because they are basically getting butchered right now by basically everybody about their medical staff?
Well, there's a little bit of that, and I think there are some pretty legitimate specific questioning about them being evasive on some things. But that's just maybe that might just be my personal read on the situation. But in terms of Quincy playing, if he could play and he had a say in it, I can understand why he would have played and not shut himself down. I can understand how the team should counsel him, about his health, but accept the decision. There's a lot of this idea that, like, if anybody's hurt, that you need to save them from themselves. And the situation is just a little more complicated than that. But what seemed like what happened is they were monitoring him because he was practicing and doing all this other stuff. So there are all these things that fans don't see all the time or don't always think about, or people who are only casually dealing with the experiences that are presented to them. But he was doing a lot of team activities, and they said they were tracking him, and then they noticed something. I don't know what that means. I don't know if they noticed it, like flames and smoke shooting out of his knee, or if some subtle piece of tracking data happened. But probably he should have been at point A in his rehab, and he wasn't there. And so they went back in and made a similar decision to say, look, it didn't take. Go back and do it again. And it really makes me wonder what kind of surgery he's having that takes this long to recover from. It probably ain't pretty, especially if I can do it twice. It kind of, I mean, I don't want to speculate on specifics, but it doesn't sound like they're just going in and spraying some saline around. You know what I'm saying?
I would probably, like, this is my theory. Again, we don't have all the medical information, but I have seen this actually happen with other players. And when they have a knee issue and there's loose cartilage and cartilage damage inside the knee, what they always end up doing is they basically get two options at that point, and they're put on the table in front of them. You can have this. We'll go in and we'll cut out just the damaged, bleeding, torn area right around where the injury actually is occurring. And that will hopefully heal up. You'll be back on the court in like 4 weeks, maybe 6 weeks. And if it heals properly, you'll be fine. No problems. But it might occur again. And if it doesn't heal properly, it will occur again multiple times. Or we can go in there and we can do like the dreaded microfracture, which has actually changed a little since what it used to be. But basically they go in and they cut out a whole chunk of the cartilage, and they basically do what's called a replacement, which is really they try to replace it with scar tissue. But that process is essentially, this should make it work. This will probably fix it for 4 to 5 years. You probably won't have as high as risk of reoccurrence as you did, but it's really painful, and it takes a lot longer to recover from the actual surgery. So you're done for the season if you do this, and you're probably done for, like, you're not going to be back to full strength for like a year. So it almost feels like that, and I've seen that happen with multiple players. It happened with a couple guys in Denver. So like it's a situation where maybe he decided to take the quicker, get back on the court, because that sounds like the kind of thing Quincy would do, and it didn't take. And then he decided, well, then we got to do the real thing.
Well, if it matters. What you said is exactly what was in my head. So
yeah.
You're as dumb as me.
Okay. Woohoo. That's always something good to know. All right. So now I want to just level some people. I think I don't think people think about this enough. And again, this is a horrible injury discussion, but there's the, in my world, the, you know, 800-pound gorilla in the house is the injury to Tyreek Evans' knee. Like, I know a lot of people saw him play the, what, 20 games he played, 25 games a season, and he was pretty crappy. I mean, he did hit some threes, but he was already a pretty limited explosion player. He could get to the basket, but he didn't have much explosion. But what we saw this season was maybe 70% of what we saw last season when he was, and I'll remind everybody, from like, I don't know, what was it, February till April, the dude was a terror. He had some bad shooting games, but he actually helped carry this team to the playoffs just as much as Anthony Davis did in a lot of respects. And he came back and he looked terrible and everybody's like, oh, he doesn't fit the system. He's a stupid player. But half of it, he just played crappily because his knee is messed up. He was talking while he was playing about having sharp pains in his knee. But he's now had at three knee surgeries to the same knee just in the last, I guess, what, 9 months, 10 months? Is there any concern that you guys have that there is no way we're ever going to see the Tyreek Evans from last year when he was actually pretty good? Or am I just like going over the top here? Because that's my concern. I'm actually worried that that Tyreek Evans is done as a impactful NBA basketball player.
I don't think that. I don't think you can say he's done as an impactful basketball player. I think you'll see him play good basketball again. I mean, this is a guy who was criticized for showing up out of shape to seasons before and has been this guy who has to play his way into shape. Like you said, it is his first 25 games or so. He did have some good performances in there. He just didn't look the same because of his knee. I think you could see him, you know, come back from that a little, at least in some kind of limited way. And if you go back, he had a lot. His first game, I think he put up like a 20-10-5, shooting really well. His first couple of games, he looked fine. You know, he didn't look like he had the explosion that he did have the year before. But to say that he's done as an impactful, you know, basketball player, it's just, I don't know, it's a little bit far. I hope not. I hope he's not done.
That is something that is on the table. Am I going to say I'm not worried about it, but I'm not near 50% with that. What I see is the team essentially had to get rid of Dejon Jones, said it right, from the first contract they had him on in order to bring in replacements to deal with the knee injury that 'cause he was going to be sidelined for a while, right?
Right.
So they kind of caught this early and he couldn't really go. His game is predicated on his athleticism, right? Like he needs to scare the people in front of him.
No, I mean, there's no reason to guard Tyreek Evans at all on the basketball court unless you know he's going to barrel downhill at you.
Yeah. You know, and whenever he had these problems with his ankle, right, his first season, you know, he wouldn't stay off the court, right? And you see his minutes drop, and then he'd be held out, and people are like, why is Monty the idiot holding him out? Oh, because he has an ankle injury that was inhibiting him from playing.
Right.
And, you know, so I mean, I think, I don't know how they caught it, why they caught it, if he reported pain or whatever, but, I mean, they were dealing with this in October, and they went through, I thought, some, I mean, waving a guy that you want, right, that you put on a three-year deal, and then later put him on a three-year deal, right? This is a guy you want. You get rid of him and bring some replacements in. That's not you going, oh, he's going to miss a couple weeks or oh, whatever.
They're planning for the long term is what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that he probably convinced him to go or waited to the last minute, you know, did the back off of it. You know, like you're saying, it's going to take X months to recover. So in that sense that it's that severe, I would say, yeah, it's on the table. But given that they're shutting them down for that long, right?
Yeah.
And then they're not clearly not afraid to put people in restriction going forward. I think they're giving them all the chance they can.
Right.
So, yeah.
So let's say that my worries about him, you know, being able to come back from this knee injury are overblown. And I can't even like quantify why it was. Like I had just the bad feeling about it that he was going to go back out again, and it just has never really gone away. And maybe I'm being stupid, which happens a lot. But would it at all surprise you, Graham, if next year he starts off on a Jrue Holiday minutes restriction to begin the season?
I would hope that's what they do. It makes perfect sense. Putting Holiday in that role, you know, to begin the season and keeping him there for as long as they did helped him acclimate to the system, like, more than, I don't know, just throwing him into the fire would have. Because he did not play well. Holiday did not play well. I don't know. I guess it was through, like, mid-December. He was not playing that well.
Yeah.
But, you know, he turned it around, you know. He something clicked. I don't know what it was. But eventually he, you know, as they increased the minutes, started to get it and play better. And I think having that, you know, putting Evans in a similar role can help him as well. People say he's not a good fit for this system or something like that. But, I mean, you look at it, he's only played 25 games, you know. Give him a chance. Put him on the bench. Put him in a limited minutes role where he can, you know, dominate the ball, not have it in the way of Holiday, Davis, and you know, really the up-tempo style, I guess. Have him kind of come along more, do his thing. I don't know. It just seems like it's a better situation.
All right, so I think we've actually covered all of the major injuries to this team that we have to worry about going forward, which, by the way, took us like a half an hour. So let's actually move on to something equally sad-ish, happy-ish. I don't know. What do you want to call it? We're going to give you the update on the race for the bottom and where the Pelicans are in it. So this is now kind of, you know, with the team shutting down a lot of the players and, you know, just having – like, I tune in now to see, is Jrue going to have a big game, and what is Tim Frazier going to do out there? That's pretty much, like, those are the guys I focus on right at this point. So the other part of my day is I now get to spend a lot of time with Draft Express and look at the players there. I get to look at the standings and watch every night and root for certain teams, and we talked about them in the last podcast. So the Pelicans have held steady in the six from the bottom position that they were in. The Sacramento Kings, however, are our biggest threat. They have the same number of losses as the Pelicans. They have one more win. Today they played the Timberwolves and they lost to the Timberwolves. So they basically, they're now 2-8 over the last 10, and they had DeMarcus Cousins sit out with a sore knee. So let's just throw this out there. Which is a worst team? The Sacramento Kings, who, by the way, Rondo has not been playing for them, really, without Rondo and DeMarcus Cousins, or the New Orleans Pelicans in their current state? Which is a worse team? Go, Jason.
Ooh.
You really had to think about that one.
There's a lot going on there.
Yeah. They still have Rudy Gay.
Right. So I'm actually going to say the Kings are worse.
Okay.
I think the Kings are in chaos. The Pelicans, more recently than they were before, are, you know, putting it into that higher gear. They're usually doing so in a situation where they, you know, can't win, but they are actually doing stuff. And you know, some guys that haven't been playing have been showing up and doing enough or playing right. well, having season highs and stuff like this. I haven't been paying that much attention to Kings, but the announcers are having a kind of, you know, the commentators are having a good bit of fun. They seem to be kind of checked out. Mm-hmm. That tells me something. So I think the Kings are worse, and they have like the coach seems to kind of lost the team a bit.
Oh yeah.
Right. You could say we, there are things to say about Gentry on both sides, good and bad. We can discuss which list is longer, but I don't think he's lost the team. So I'm going to say as a functional unit, the Kings are worse.
Okay. Graham, do you agree or disagree? I think last time we talked, you just couldn't accept that the Pelicans could be worse than the Kings. Are you still on that train?
Yeah, I have this irrational need to be better than the Kings. And we won, right? We beat them this past week, completed the 4-0 sweep of the Kings. So
yeah. Yeah, and actually I'm wrong. Rajon Rondo actually came back and played tonight, 38 minutes. So okay. He must be feeling pretty good. Mm. Of course, the team lost to the Timberwolves, which is the other team that you should be kind of be focusing on in this race to the bottom. The Timberwolves are eliminated from the playoffs, which the Pelicans are still mathematically in it. Just everybody knows if they just go on a tear offensively, they could still make it. I mean, it's possible, right? But anyways, the Timberwolves are four games down in the loss column. So those are the games that the Pelicans, they have to lose four in a row just to tie them. And they're still up three wins. So the Timberwolves are basically 3.5 games ahead of them. So we've been saying all along, Pelicans are only 3.5 games out of it or four games out of it through the middle part of the season, which was kind of ignoring the reality of what that number meant. Is there, I'll leave this to you, Jason, is there any way that we should think the Pelicans could somehow fall below the Timberwolves? 3.5 games with, what is it, 14 games to play? 12 games to play, sorry, 12 games to play.
I mean, I don't see why anybody should think that's a decent probability at this point.
Okay.
You know, I mean, the Timberwolves are truly bad, and they haven't even really kicked it into bad gear, right? Like, what are they doing to actively be bad besides trying their best, right?
It's true. Like, that's one of the funny things is people talk about how they have Karl-Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins, and they were trying to win with those guys and a bunch of other players on the team, and they're worse than the Pelicans are.
I mean, we can sit there and talk about, you know, who's a net negative, or like, or talk, have real or humorous conversations about Michael Beasley, you know, type effects of players on teams, right? But Rubio just had like in some sense, a career type game or a season best game recently, right? I mean, it's not like they're just like, oh, you know, like the example. This is the time in like the you know 2012 season or whatever, like Ariza and Okafor have hurt knees and stuff, right?
Right.
And none of their Arizas and Okafors have hurt knees. Yeah. So I just don't see it.
Yeah. And just so everybody hears it, like tonight, you know, they're not playing for anything anymore. They still played Andrew Wiggins 41 minutes, Zach LaVine 44 minutes, Karl-Anthony Towns only 29, but it was because he had 5 fouls and had to sit out part of it. And Gorgui Dieng, 37 minutes. They're playing their best players huge minutes to try to win this game. They're still trying to win. So, like, I mean, I almost feel a little optimistic here because, like, the Pelicans have a better record, but they had a lot more healthy bodies and they had Anthony Davis actually playing minutes. Like, I have a hard time, like, I know you just said it's kind of silly for me to think this way, but it wouldn't shock me if a team that's starting Luke Babbitt, Dante Cunningham, Omer Asik, whoever they play at shooting guard now at this point, and Drew Holiday doesn't play worse through the rest of the season as a Timberwolves, and possibly significantly worse. Like, I'm holding out hope. I'm holding out hope they could be that much worse. Which is that stupid? Yeah, probably. And it's probably a little sad too. But you know, I think there's a chance. There's always a chance that they could be that bad.
It could come down to the last game of the season.
It could.
We play them
on the last game.
Yeah. Minnesota.
Hey.
Yeah.
It's like the anti-Spurs game.
That's right. That is. If that actually happens, I'm actually going to really enjoy that last game just because of the comedy that'll have to be involved. Like, on the flip side, the New York Knicks, who actually managed to win, they are now one game behind us in the loss, but they've won three games more than us. The Orlando Magic is two games behind us in the loss. They've won three more games, and so is the Denver Nuggets. Denver Nuggets are on a 5-5 tear. They're just tearing up the place. So do you guys think that we need to worry about any of those three teams? Do you think any of them are just going to start? Like, could the Knicks just shut down Melo and Porzingis has hit the rookie wall so hard that they're gonna be at a risk to be worse than us? Or do you think we're pretty much safe from those three teams as far as them dropping below us?
I don't think so. I don't think we have to worry about them. They have NBA players. We don't.
They're not starting Luke Babbitt, is that what you're saying?
Babbitt was our best starter.
Good God. What about Drew? Drew is out there.
Babbitt's best game was the Miami one, right? Was it the Clippers one?
The Miami one?
Yeah, Drew had a tough night.
He was struggling in that game. All right, so basically our competition comes down to the Timberwolves and Sacramento Kings. So what everybody should be rooting for is lots of wins by both of those two teams. Hopefully they won't be playing each other too much like they did tonight, so that both of them can rack up some wins and the Pelicans can slip into the five spot. Because if anybody ever paid attention to my value of a draft pick, picks 2 through 5 were pretty much the same value averaged out over the years. But once you got into the 6 to 9 range, your chances of a bust almost doubled. So we want to be in the top 5. Top 5 or bust. All right, so unless you guys got anything else, I think I'm going to call that the podcast. Thanks, everybody, for listening to In the Know.